Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1071. 75th anniversaries. Walking the Snake on the Earth Island with Pierre Omidyar. This is being recorded on May 7th of the year 2019. The title of the program is a reference to the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk, which I have referenced many times over the years. It is put out by National Vanguard Books, and it involves a Nazi takeover not only of the U.S., but ultimately of the whole world. This follows a series of WMD terrorist incidents in which martial law is declared, and the Nazi SS, who have gone underground and infiltrated the U.S. military, then take over the country. But the main element in Serpent's Walk, and I will refresh some of this later, is the SS building up their economic muscle, and we know that in the form of the Bormann Flight Capital Organization, they have done just that. And then they buy into the opinion-forming media and gradually reshape the view of history, and in particular of the Third Reich and the Second World War and fascism in general. It is not unlike George Orwell's Ministry of Truth in his famous book, 1984. It is, in fact, the Ministry of Lies, but as it is explained in 1984, he who controls the past controls the present, and he who controls the present controls the future. We discussed that, by the way, in the first two AFA programs, Looking Back from 1984, The Hidden History of the Cold War, Parts 1 and 2. We are going to be taking a look at things in India and things in Ukraine. The reference to the Earth Island, again, something we have spoken about many times over the years. That is the enormous stretch of land running from the Straits of Gibraltar all the way across Europe, through the Balkans, the former Soviet Union, Eastern Europe, China, and India. It is the largest contiguous landmass on Earth. It contains most of the world's population. It contains most of the world's natural resources, including and especially oil. And geopoliticians have long seen controlling the Earth Island as the key to world domination. Ukraine in Eastern Europe on the border of Russia, and India on the southern flank of China, and encompassing the access to key waterways are two very critical elements of the Earth Island. In the For the Record 889, among other programs, we dealt with Pierre Omidyar's pivotal efforts in elevating not only Narendra Modi and his Hindutva fascist BJP, a cat's paw for the RSS, the organization that murdered Mahatma Gandhi and that was patterned after Benito Mussolini's black shirts in Italy, but also it was Pierre Omidyar working with, among other elements, the Agency for International Development and the National Endowment for Democracy, which both partner with U.S. intelligence to the point where they function as cat's paws for U.S. intelligence. And it was Pierre Omidyar who also played a key role in elevating the OUNB successor organizations to power in Ukraine. We are going to be taking a look at the walking of the snake, so to speak, in both India and Ukraine, the complete and institutional perversion of the history of World War II and fascism. This is a perversion which is very likely to be handed down to future generations. And again, it is Pierre Omidyar who played a decisive role in elevating both Narendra Modi in India and the OUNB successor organizations in Ukraine. In a Food for Thought post, I noted the irony of Pierre Omidyar, part of the PayPal mafia, by the way, founding The Intercept, which has received plaudits as a vehicle for investigative journalism. It is with Pierre Omidyar and The Intercept that both Eddie the Friendly Snowden and Glenn Greenwald, basically for all practical purposes a Nazi attorney, placed the sensitive information about NSA that was basically absconded with by Eddie Snowden, basically placing Pierre Omidyar and The Intercept in a position to blackmail NSA into doing what they want. I have spoken about that at great length in many programs. I can't really do justice to it here. It is ironic in light of the suppression of an outright murder of investigative reporters and journalistic critics of the government in both Ukraine and India that Citizen Omidyar, as I have dubbed him, has emerged as a focal point for, quote, journalistic freedom. That is just wild. That would be like having Heinrich Himmler, the head of the SS, presiding over a bar mitzvah. It is grotesque. And with, again, Ukraine being in a pivotal position vis-a-vis Europe, and with India in a pivotal geographical position in Asia. Ukraine, by the way, also has a huge swath of some of the most arable land in Europe or on the face of the earth. It also possesses roughly a quarter of Europe's proven natural gas reserves. India is the second most populous country on earth. A nuclear power has a huge market that corporations are looking to penetrate. The recent series that I did on Socialists for Trump and Hitler, dealing with, among other things, Subhas Chandra Bose, the Duce of Bengal, as he was known, a prominent Indian fascist who is apparently the political idol of Sekhar Chakrabarty, who is the real power behind the throne, so to speak, of AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. These programs have served as something of a voyage of discovery, among other things, for yours truly. And whereas I was familiar with Subhas Chandra Bose and had recorded material about him as early as January of 1985, which was accessed in that series, I was not aware of the stature of Bose for some people in India, a sizable portion of people in India. Bose was a doctrinaire fascist, made a pilgrimage to Italy in 1935 to give a copy of his book personally to Mussolini, whom he admired, and he felt that India should be ruled with an iron fist by a ruthless dictator for 20 years after gaining independence. I had speculated about a Bosean underground in India. I think calling it an underground would be selling it short. There is and for some time has been, I realized, a prominent Bosean fascism in India. And now the marriage that I had speculated about, the convergence of Narendra Modi, the BJP, and the RSS's Hindutva fascism, the Hindu nationalist fascism of the RSS has now in fact been merged with Subhas Chandra Bose. On the 75th anniversary of Subhas Chandra Bose declaring some of the Andaman and Nicobar Islands to be independent and now part of an quote, independent unquote Indian territory, and when Bose hoisted the tricolor flag, which is now the flag of India, it was not his flag. It was designed by Mahatma Gandhi and was the flag of the Indian National Congress. Originally, it had the spinning wheel that Gandhi made famous in the center. That was ultimately replaced by the 24-spoke Ashoka chakra. The Bosean fascists, and as we will see, Narendra Modi, have claimed basically that flag as their own and have revised history to maintain that this was Subhas Chandra Bose who raised the tricolor flag. Calling his hoisting of that flag and the renaming of the Andaman and Nicobar Islands, which has now been reinstated by Narendra Modi, as the declaration of, quote, independence, unquote, of India, is very much like the declaring of areas like Croatia and the Ukraine under Nazi occupation in World War II as, quote, independent, unquote. These were Axis puppet governments. The Andaman Islands were renamed by Subhas Chandra Bose on December 30th, 1943. On December 30th of 2018, Narendra Modi, wearing the military cap of the Azad Hind Fauj, those were Subhas Chandra Bose's Asian fighting forces which fought on behalf of Imperial Japan in World War II, paid tribute to Subhas Chandra Bose, lauded his hoisting of the tricolor flag, which again was designed by Mahatma Gandhi in the early 1920s and was the flag of the Indian National Congress, not of Subhas Chandra Bose and his Quisling forces. He then, Narendra Modi, that is, lauded Subhas Chandra Bose, named one of the islands after Subhas Chandra Bose, announced the minting of a coin that would be a tribute to Subhas Chandra Bose, the issuing of a postage stamp that would be a tribute to Subhas Chandra Bose, the naming of a university after Subhas Chandra Bose, and then Modi prayed at a giant statue of Subhas Chandra Bose on one of those islands. This is grotesque. I will read more about it. But it is, in fact, the marrying of the Hindutva, the Hindu nationalist anti-Muslim fascism of the RSS and its cat's paw party, the BJP, with the Bosean fascism of Subhas Chandra Bose. Again, Subhas Chandra Bose was nicknamed the Duce of Bengal after his idol Mussolini. He traveled in 1935 to Italy specifically to give a copy of his book to his idol Benito Mussolini. Subhas Chandra Bose's gravitas in the Axis pantheon was such that he networked with and got FaceTime with Adolf Hitler, Reichsführer SS Heinrich Himmler, Benito Mussolini, the Emperor of Japan, and Prime Minister Hideki Tojo of Japan. His European fighting forces were ultimately folded into the Waffen-SS. In 1942, in Hamburg, Germany, during the war, Subhas Chandra Bose founded the Deutsche Indische Gesellschaft, or the Indo-German Society. That is now the largest bilateral organization in Germany. It is headed up by Subhas Chandra Bose's grandnephew Saraya Kumar Bose, and it specializes in placing Germans in the large and ever-growing Indian IT / tech business. Suraya Kumar Bose was basically brought to Germany at the behest, or entered Germany at the behest, of Alexander Werth, W-E-R-T-H, who was the German translator for Subhas Chandra Bose's European fighting forces, which again were ultimately folded into the Waffen-SS. Werth and Saraya Kumar Bose then wrote a glowing biography of Subhas Chandra Bose called Beacon Across Asia, in collaboration with other World War II associates / collaborators of Subhas Chandra Bose. What we are seeing with both this disgusting, frankly, 75th anniversary celebration of Bose's declaration of, quote, independence, unquote, under Japanese occupation in World War II, and also the 75th anniversary celebration in Ukraine of the founding of the 14th Waffen-SS Division, the Galician Division, is walking the snake. We are seeing in Europe and Ukraine the rebranding of fascism as a laudatory, and Nazism as a laudatory, anti-communist / anti-Russian force. In Asia, we are seeing the rebranding of fascism as an anti-colonial, anti-imperial force. We are seeing the snake being walked in the Earth Island, in particular in two countries where fascist elements moved into ascent, in part, in considerable measure, through the assistance of Pierre Omidyar. That is the reference to 75th anniversaries, the 75th anniversary of Subhas Chandra Bose under Japanese occupation, declaring, quote, independence, unquote, for some islands in the Nicobar and Andaman archipelago, and also the 75th anniversary of the founding of the 14th Waffen-SS or Galician Division. I cannot emphasize strongly enough for listeners to use the written descriptions for this program. Things are getting so bad that now I'm able to show pictures which largely explain this. Not only Narendra Modi wearing his Azon Hind Farj cap, the cap of Bose's Asian fighting forces, and praying in front of a giant statue of Bose, but the stunning full-color picture of the official Ukrainian governmental tribute to the founding of the 14th Waffen-SS Division with a uniformed Ukrainian color guard marching in the back of three people wearing Waffen-SS uniforms, standing at attention with World War II vintage German Mauser rifles. The snake is being walked indeed, and the remaking of public opinion, again, portraying Nazism as a anti-communist and anti-Russian bulwark, and in Asia, representing fascism as an anti-colonial, anti-imperial liberating force, this is taking place. And bear in mind the apparent political idolatry of Subhas Chandra Bose by Sekhap Chakrabarty, who is the driving force behind AOC. He was her campaign manager, is her chief of staff, was the founder of two political action committees that are the financial foundation of her candidacy, and on the board of which Justice Democrats she sat. Those two PACs channeled a little under $1 million in what was kind of a tacky move to a political consultant, a political consultancy firm that was also headed and founded by Sekhar Chakrabarty, the apparent Subhas Chandra Bose, who basically apparently idolizes Subhas Chandra Bose.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
The 75th anniversaries, again, of the declaration of, quote, independence, unquote, by Subhas Chandra Bose on December 30th, 1943, under the stewardship of the Japanese occupation forces, and the celebration of the 75th anniversary of the founding of the 14th Waffen-SS Division, which took place in the summer of 2018. Those 75th anniversary celebrations are really the walking the snake, the rebranding, the remaking of fascism for a future generation. From India Today, from their web desk of December 31st of 2018, Modi remains three islands of Andaman and Nicobar, other projects announced by the Prime Minister. Prime Minister Narendra Modi on Sunday announced the renaming of three islands of Andaman and Nicobar Archipelago as a tribute to Netaji Subhas Chandra Bose. The Ross Island was renamed as Netaji Subhas Chandra Bose Dweep, that's D-W-E-E-P, the Neal Island as Shaheed Dweep, and Havelock Island as Swaraj Dweep. Modi began his speech by asking the people on the ground to switch on the flashlights of their mobile phones to honor Bose. Thousands of mobile flashlights were then switched on, providing a visual delight. Donning the Azad Hind Fauj, or Indian National Army cap, again, that was the military fatigue cap of Bose's Asian fighting forces, he, Modi, addressed a public meeting at Netaji Stadium, again named after Subhas Chandra Bose, on the occasion of the 75th anniversary of the hoisting of the tricolor by Bose. The tricolor flag is the official flag of India. It is being appropriated by Bose / Modi. It was designed by Mahatma Gandhi in the early 1920s, and it is the flag of the Indian, was the flag of the Indian National Congress, not of Subhas Chandra Bose, not of Narendra Modi. But they're walking the snake, and now it is being appropriated by the Duce of Bengal. More from Narendra Modi. When it comes to heroes of the freedom struggle, we take the name of Netaji Subhas Chandra Bose with pride. The first Prime Minister of the Azad Azab Hind government, Subhas Babu, that means Brother Subhas, had made India's independence resolution on the soil of Andaman, unquote, he said. At the stadium, again named after Subhas Chandra Bose, the PM also released a commemorative stamp, its first day cover, again, to Subhas Chandra Bose, and a 75 rupees coin, also a tribute to Bose. He also announced setting up of a deemed university named after Subhas Chandra Bose. The Andaman and Nicobar Islands are not just a symbol of India's natural beauty, but are also like a place of pilgrimage for Indians, said Modi. Modi also visited the Marina Park and hoisted a national flag on a 150-foot high mast, besides paying floral tribute at Netaji Subhas Chandra Bose's statue. On December 30th, 1943, Bose had suggested that Andaman and Nicobar Islands be renamed as Sahib and Swaraj Dweep, respectively. During World War II, the Japanese had captured the Andaman and Nicobar Islands, and Mataji came here as the Azad Hind Fauj, led by him, was an ally of the Japanese forces. One more time. During World War II, the Japanese had captured the Andaman and Nicobar Islands, and Mataji came here as the Azad Hind Fauj, led by him, was an ally of the Japanese forces. Quote, the historical event of December 30th, 1943 has been completed after 75 years, Moby said. Again, the marriage of Bosean fascism and Hindutva fascism has been effected, and Moby is walking the snake. Now, Subhas Chandra Bose, the Duce of Bengal, was a champion of Indian independence, and my guess is if Sekhap Chakraborty's T-shirt gambit ever becomes a focal point of discussion outside of the right-wing blogosphere, which we're all over it initially, it will be from this revised standpoint. Oh, Bose was a freedom fighter. He struggled for Indian independence. He first declared Indian independence on the Andaman and Nicobar Islands and hoisted the tricolor flag. Did so under Japanese occupation. And the tricolor flag, again, was designed by Mahatma Gandhi. It was the flag of the Indian National Congress. If Gandhi were alive today, he isn't, because he was murdered by the RSS, as we looked at in For the Records 988 and 989, he would puke at seeing something like this. He would just throw up. Oh, unless he'd been fasting for a few weeks. But he would puke looking at this. This is disgusting. And it really, seeing Sekhap Chakraborty smiling in that Twitter or maybe Instagram video defending AOC with the Subhas Chandra Bose T-shirt is equally disgusting. If Gandhi saw that, he'd puke again if he hadn't been fasting. Now, about the Andaman and Nicobar Islands under Japanese occupation. From the School In blog of January 22nd of 2019 by Jayant, J-A-Y-A-N-T, Dasgupta, B-A-S-G-U-P-T-A, and again, I'm probably botching these Indian pronunciations. Islands renamed. National memory of Mataji's Andaman visit is at variance with local recollections. On December 30th, Prime Minister Narendra Modi traveled to the Andaman and Nicobar Islands to commemorate Mataji Subhas Chandra Bose's visit to the archipelago during World War II on the last 3 days of 1943. At that time, the islands were under the occupation of the Imperial Japanese forces, a little-known fact of Indian history. During his visit, Moby announced that three small islands in the South Andamans would be renamed. While Ross Island has been renamed after Bose, Neal Island has been christened Shahid Dweep, Martyrs Island, and Havelock Island is now officially known as Swaraj Dweep, Self-Rule Island. The three islands were renamed purportedly to honor Bose's memory. A perfectly valid reason, one might say. But what if that memory itself is fraught with contestation? What if the national memory of Bose's visit is at variance with local memory? Bose had been invited to Port Blair in 1943 by the Japanese government in his capacity as the leader of the Indian National Army, which was in alliance with the Japanese. Here he expressed the wish that the Andaman Islands should be renamed Shaheed Dweep and the Nicobar Islands be renamed Swaraj Dweep. His wish had finally been fulfilled, albeit on a much reduced scale. K.R. Ganesh, the MP from the Andaman and Nicobar Islands, Ganesh pointed out to the House that the local people of the Andamans were imprisoned and tortured by the Japanese in the same cellular jail in Port Blair where Nepaji Bose raised the flag of a free India for the first time in December of 1943. Again, it was not Bose's flag. It was Gandhi's flag. It was the flag of the Indian National Congress. This is revisionist history of the most disgusting kind. Again, if Gandhi were alive today and if he hadn't been fasting for 3 weeks, of course, Gandhi was killed by the political forces behind Narendra Modi, and by the way, for which Tulsi Gabbard fronts, he would puke at seeing this. MP Samar Guha was unaware of this, of the Japanese occupation, as were most other members of the Indian Parliament. He wanted to know, that is Samar Guha, a member of the Indian Parliament, he wanted to know if the atrocities by the Japanese occupation forces on the local people had taken place before or after Bose's visit. Ganesh's reply was, before, during, and after. Skipping down. An article about the occupation of the Dutch East Indies had this line, quote, the occupation was not gentle. This could well have been written for the Andaman and Nicobar Islands. The article goes on to say, Japanese troops acted harshly against local populations. The Japanese military police were especially feared. Food and vital necessities were confiscated by the occupiers, causing widespread misery and starvation by the end of the war. The situation was the same in Port Blair and surrounding villages and nearby islands such as Neal Island and Havelock Island. Again, these are all just renamed after Bose. I have come across many stories of the fear of the Kempe Tai, the Japanese military police, of the arrests, the beatings, the hunger, the fear, and anxiety that have gripped the people with hundreds in jail for suspicion of spying for the British. And again, Subhas Chandra Bose was collaborating with them.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
And again, look at the written description for this program. There is just an amazing full-color picture of the official celebration of the founding of the 14th Waffen-SS Division. This was held in Lvov in Ukraine, one of Ukraine's largest cities. And there is in the background an official Ukrainian governmental honor guard. And in the front are three Waffen-SS clad soldiers holding the German Mauser rifles used during World War II, but for much of the war, with their bayonets fixed. We are going to read an article from The Nation magazine from February 22nd of 2019. This is by Lev Golinkin, G-O-L-I-N-K-I-N. Neo-Nazis and far-right are on the march in Ukraine. And it talks about what is taking place in Ukraine. And I would note that among the journalistic outlets that have been reporting about this are Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty, both, by the way, with a long association with U.S. intelligence. Radio Free Liberty and Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty have suddenly transformed into organs of Russian propaganda. This is quite remarkable. The recent election in Ukraine of a non-practicing Jew as the president of Ukraine has been hailed as proof that the Russian propaganda about Nazis and fascists and anti-Semites being in power in Ukraine is just that. It is propaganda. Not so much. Reading from this Nation article from February 22nd. 5 years ago, Ukraine's Maidan uprising ousted President Viktor Yanukovych to the cheers and support of the West. Politicians and analysts in the U.S. and Europe not only celebrated the uprising as a triumph of democracy, but denied reports of Maidan's ultranationalism, smearing those who warned about the dark side of the uprising as Moscow puppets and useful idiots. Freedom was on the march on the Ukraine. And by the way, that smearing of those who would tell the truth is going on to this day. Going on with this article from The Nation. Today, increasing reports of far-right violence, ultranationalism, and erosion of basic freedoms are giving the lie to the West's initial euphoria. There are neo-Nazi pogroms against the Roma, a.k.a. gypsies, rampant attacks on feminists and LGBT groups, book bans, and state-sponsored glorification of Nazi collaborators. These stories of Ukraine's dark nationalism aren't coming out of Moscow. They're being filed by Western media, including U.S.-funded Radio Free Europe, Jewish organizations such as the World Jewish Congress and the Simon Wiesenthal Center, and watchdogs like Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and Freedom House, which issued a joint report warning that Kiev is losing the monopoly on the use of force in the country as far-right gangs operate with impunity. 5 years after Maidan, the beacon of democracy is looking more like a torchlight parade. The next section, a neo-Nazi battalion in the heart of Europe. Volunteer Ukrainian unit includes Nazis from USA Today from March 10th of 2015. This is by no means just the Azov battalion. That is the most important. The D.C. establishment's standard defense of Kiev is to point out that Ukraine's far-right has a smaller percentage of seats in the parliament than their counterparts in places like France. That is a spurious argument. What Ukraine's far-right lacks in poll numbers, it makes up for with things that Marine Le Pen could only dream of. Paramilitary units and free reign for them on the streets of Ukraine. Post-Maidan Ukraine is the world's only nation to have a neo-Nazi formation in its armed forces. The Azov Battalion was initially formed out of the neo-Nazi gang Patriot of Ukraine. Andrei Beletsky, the gang's leader who became Azov's commander, once wrote the quote, "Ukraine's mission is to, quote, lead the white races of the world in a final crusade against the Semite-led Untermenschen," unquote. Beletsky is now a deputy in Ukraine's parliament. In the fall of 2014, Azov, which is accused of human rights abuses, including torture by Human Rights Watch and the United Nations, was incorporated into Ukraine's National Guard. And by the way, it is receiving training and weaponry from the U.S., although that was initially proscribed by an act of Congress that was headed up by John Conyers, had led the fight against the Nazis in Ukraine, and also against Modi and his Hindutva fascist in India. He was removed from power under a very dubious, quote, hashtag Me Too charge that was solicited by Mike Cernovich, an alt-right blogger. Conrad was 88 years old. He's old and doesn't have the financial resources to fight a massive lawsuit like that. So he basically said, bleep it. I would note that Conrad's administrative assistant for many years was the late Rosa Parks, who, before she became famous for the bus boycott in Alabama, she had been an advocate for the redress of sexual grievance, both for black women who had been raped by white men with impunity and for black men who had been accused of raping white women and often lynched. Basically, John Conyers was lynched by a hashtag, an incredibly dubious hashtag Me Too charge that was solicited by far-right blogger Mike Cernovich, who once intoned, quote, "Misogyny gets you laid," unquote, an actual quote by him. But he had lobbied against the Azov Battalion and others in Ukraine, as well as against Narendra Modi and the Hindutva fascists in India. Returning to this Nation article. In the fall of 2014, Azov, which is accused of human rights abuses, including torture by Human Rights Watch and the UN, was incorporated into Ukraine's National Guard. While the group officially denies any neo-Nazi connections, Azov's nature has been confirmed by multiple Western outlets. By the way, they have the swastika and the SS rune on their combat helmets. The New York Times called the battalion, quote, openly Nazi, unquote, while USA Today, The Daily Beast, The Telegraph, and Haaretz documented group members' proclivity for swastikas, salutes, and other Nazi symbols, and individual fighters have also acknowledged being neo-Nazis. In January of 2018, Azov rolled out its national Druzhina Street Patrol unit, whose members swore fealty, personal fealty to Beletsky, and pledged to, quote, restore Ukrainian order, unquote, to the streets. The regime quickly distinguished itself by carrying out pogroms against the Roma and LGBT organizations and storming a municipal council. Earlier this year, Kiev announced the storming unit will be monitoring polls in next month's presidential election. One more time. Earlier this year, Kiev announced that the storming unit will be monitoring polls in next month's presidential election. In 2017, Congressman Ro Khanna led the effort to ban Azov from receiving U.S. arms and training, but the damage has already been done. The research group Bellingcat proved that Azov had already received access to American grenade launchers, while a Daily Beast investigation showed that U.S. trainers are unable to prevent aid from reaching white supremacists. And Azov itself had personally posted a video of the unit welcoming NATO representatives. Azov isn't the only far-right formation to get Western affirmation. In December of 2014, Amnesty International accused the Dnipro 1 Battalion of potential war crimes, including, quote, using starvation of civilians as a method of warfare, unquote. 6 months later, Senator John McCain visited and praised the battalion. Particularly concerning is Azov's campaign to transform Ukraine into a hub for transnational white supremacy. The unit has recruited neo-Nazis from Germany, the UK, Brazil, Sweden, and America. Last October, the FBI arrested 4 California white supremacists who had allegedly received training from Azov and who parenthetically appeared to overlap some other men from California who were involved with the Charlottesville incident. Continuing. This is a classic example of blowback U.S. support of radicals abroad, ricocheting to hit America. Next, far-right ties to government. Ukrainian police declare admiration for Nazi collaborators. This from Radio Free Europe of February 13th of 2019. Speaker of Parliament Andrei Parubi co-founded and led two neo-Nazi organizations, the Social National Party of Ukraine, later renamed Svoboda, and Patriot of Ukraine, whose members would eventually form the core of Azov. Although Parubi left the far right in the early 2000s, he has not rejected his past. When asked about it in a 2016 interview, Parubi replied that his values, unquote, haven't changed. Well, if his values haven't changed, he hasn't left the far right. This is a verbal leisure, basically is perverting reality. Continuing, Parubi, whose autobiography shows him marching with the neo-Nazi Reichsangel symbol used by Aryan nations, regularly meets with Washington think tanks and politicians. His neo-Nazi background is ignored or outright denied. Even more disturbing is the far-right's penetration of law enforcement. Shortly after Maidan, the U.S. equipped and trained the newly founded National Police in what was intended to be a hallmark program buttressing Ukrainian democracy. The Deputy Minister of the Interior, which controls the National Police, is Vadim Troyan, a veteran of Azov and patriot of Ukraine. In 2014, when Troyan was being considered for police chief of Kiev, Ukrainian Jewish leaders were appalled by his neo-Nazi background. Today, he's deputy of the department running U.S.-trained law enforcement in the entire nation. Earlier this month, Radio Free Europe reported on National Police leadership admiring Stefan Bandera, a Nazi collaborator and fascist whose troops participated in the Holocaust, on social media. The fact that Ukraine's police is peppered with far-right supporters explains why neo-Nazis operate with impunity on the streets. Next, state-sponsored glorification of Nazi collaborators. That's the next section. By the way, we have spoken about all of this before. Ukrainian extremists celebrate Ukrainian Nazi SS divisions in the middle of a major Ukrainian city. This from the Anti-Defamation League Director of European Affairs of April 28th of 2018. And it says Ukrainian extremists. This was an official celebration. There is a Ukrainian armor guard in the background, as well as the three Waffen-SS clad guys in the foreground. Again, that full color picture is in the written description for this program, which will be available shortly. It's not just the military and street gangs. Ukraine's far-right has successfully hijacked the post-Maidan government to impose an intolerant and ultra-nationalist culture over the land. In 2015, the Ukrainian parliament passed legislation making two World War II paramilitaries, the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, or OUN, and the Ukrainian Insurgent Army, UPA, Heroes of Ukraine, and made it a criminal offense to deny their heroism. The OUN had collaborated with the Nazis and participated in the Holocaust, while the UPA slaughtered thousands of Jews and 70 to 100,000 Poles on their own volition. The government-funded Ukrainian Institute of National Memory is institutionalizing the whitewashing of Nazi collaborators. Last summer, the Ukrainian parliament featured an exhibit commemorating the OUN's 1941 proclamation of cooperation with the Third Reich. Imagine the French government installing an exhibit celebrating the Vichy state. torch light marches in honor of OUN UPA leaders like Roman Shukevich, a commander in a 3rd Reich Auxiliary Battalion, are a regular feature of the new Ukraine. The recuperation even extends to SS Galishina, a Ukrainian division of the Waffen-SS. The director of the Institute of National Memory proclaimed that the SS fighters were, quote, war victims, unquote. The government's embrace of Bandera is not only deplorable, but also extremely divisive, considering that the OUN-UPA are reviled in eastern Ukraine. Predictably, the celebration of Nazi collaborators has accompanied a rise in outright anti-Semitism. Jews out, chanted thousands during a January 2017 march honoring OUN leader Bandera. The next day, the police denied hearing anything anti-Semitic. That summer, a 3-day festival celebrating the Nazi collaborator Shukevich capped off with the firebombing of a synagogue. That festival also coincided with the anniversary of the beginning of the extermination of the Jewish population of the Lvov ghetto. That was, as we have seen, performed by the Einsatzgruppe Nachtigall, or the Nachtigall Battalion, headed up by Roman Shukevich, and it was the political officer attached to that was SS officer Theodor Oberlamber, who later went on to become a German cabinet minister under Konrad Adenauer. Returning again to this Nation article. In November of 2017, Radio Free Europe reported Nazi salutes as 20,000 marched in honor of the UPA. And last April, hundreds marched in Lvov with coordinated Nazi salutes honoring the SS Galishina. The march was promoted by the Lvov regional government. The Holocaust revisionism is a multi-pronged effort ranging from government-funded seminars, brochures, and board games to the proliferation of plaques, statues, and streets renamed after the butchers of Jews to far-right children's camps where youth are inculcated with ultra-nationalist ideology. And this next point here is fundamental. Within several years, an entire generation will be indoctrinated to worship Holocaust perpetrators as national heroes. And again, if I were to say what I just said in Ukraine, I could be arrested. That's a crime now.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
The next section is called Book Bans. No state should be allowed to interfere in the writing of history, British historian Anthony Beaver, BWVOR, after his award-winning book was banned in Ukraine. This as reported in The Telegraph, a British newspaper, of January 23rd of 2018. Ukraine's State Committee for Television and Radio Broadcasting is enforcing the glorification of Ukraine's new heroes by banning, quote, anti-Ukrainian literature that goes against the government narrative. This ideological censorship includes acclaimed books by Western authors. In January of 2018, Ukraine made international headlines by banning Stalingrad by award-winning British historian Anthony Beaver because of a single paragraph about a Ukrainian unit massacring 90 Jewish children during World War II. In December, Kiev banned The Book Thieves by Swedish author Anders Rydell, or Rydell, R-Y-D-E-L-L, which, ironically, is about the Nazis' suppression of literature because he mentioned troops loyal to Semyon Petliura, an early 20th century nationalist leader, had slaughtered Jews. By the way, this was made into a hit American movie about 5 years ago. This month, that is to say the book thieves, this month, the Ukrainian embassy in Washington exported this intolerance to America by brazenly demanding that the U.S. ban a Russian movie from American theaters. Apparently, the billions Washington invested in promoting democracy in Ukraine have failed to teach Kiev basic concepts of free speech. And then the next section, anti-Semitism. I'm telling you one more time, go to hell, kikes. The Ukrainian people have had it to hear with you, unquote. Security Services Reserve General Vasily Volk, V-O-V-K, on May 11, 2017. What this does not mention is that he was the Ukrainian intelligence officer in charge of the Ukrainian, quote, investigation, unquote, of the shootdown of Malaysian Airlines Flight MH17, which was blamed by the world community on Russia, and which, in fact, appears to have been shot down by Ukrainian forces in their military. Unsurprisingly, government-led glorification of Holocaust perpetrators was a green light for other forms of anti-Semitism. The past 3 years saw an explosion of swastikas and SS wounds on city streets, death threats, and vandalism of Holocaust memorials. Actually, beginning again. The past 3 years saw an explosion of swastikas and SS wounds on city streets, death threats, and vandalism of Holocaust memorials, Jewish centers, cemeteries, tombs, and places of worship, all of which led Israel to take the unusual step of publicly urging Kiev to address the epidemic. I would note that Benjamin Netanyahu, however, received Petro Poroshenko openly, despite the fact that, among other things, Petro Poroshenko laid a wreath in tribute to the OUNB at the site of the Babi Yar Ravine, where thousands of Jews were massacred by by German troops and OUNB and UPA fascists. More about that. In a future program, I would note that Benjamin Netanyahu's father, Benzion Netanyahu, was the personal secretary to Zaev or Vladimir Jabotinsky, who headed up the fascist element, the main fascist element in the Zionist movement, and who proposed an alliance with the aforementioned Semyon Petliura, who was a Ukrainian pogromist whose forces slaughtered thousands of Jews. Last paragraph of this. We will continue with a reading of this article in our next program. Public officials make anti-Semitic threats with no repercussions. These include a security services general promising to eliminate the GD, a slur equivalent to kikes, a parliament deputy going off on an anti-Semitic rant on television, a far-right politician lamenting Hitler didn't finish off the Jews, and an ultra-nationalist leader vowing to cleanse Odessa of GD or kikes. For the first few years after Maidan, Jewish organizations largely refrained from criticizing Ukraine, perhaps in the hope Kiev would address the issue on its own. But by 2018, the increasing frequency of anti-Semitic incidents led Jewish groups to break their silence. Last year, the Israeli government's annual report on anti-Semitism heavily featured Ukraine, which had more incidents than all post-Soviet states combined. The World Jewish Congress, the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum, and 57 members of the U.S. Congress all vociferously condemned Kiev's Nazi glorification and the concomitant anti-Semitism. More about this, however, in our next program. Suffice it to say that on the 75th anniversary of Subhas Chandra Bose renaming islands under Japanese occupation, Narendra Modi did just that, issued a stamp, a coin, a university is to be named after Subhas Chandra Bose, and Modi donned the cap, the Azad Hind Fauj, and prayed at the statue of Modi. And in Ukraine, on the 75th anniversary of the founding of the 14th Waffen-SS Division, that event was celebrated. This concludes for the Rector Program number 1071. 75th anniversaries. Walking the Snake on the Earth Island with Pierre O'Meagher. This is being recorded on May 7th of 2019. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.